Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out, the most exciting TV on TV.
You didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Robert Witters.
Yeah. Judy Nathans.
Right. And today.
It's December 3rd.
December 3rd.
Yeah,
we're cruising right along.
It's the start of winter, real winter. We had real snow.
What do you call it? Meteorological winter or something like that?
Is that what it is?
I've heard something
like
that.
Right, because winter really isn't until the 21st.
Right, exactly.
But the snow on the ground and no school today. Hey. As soon as I saw that Boston had closed, I said, because Cambridge always follows Boston.
Of course, it was school for me. But
MIT. Yeah, universities generally don't close unless
they actually cancel classes, anything that was taking place before 10 a.m.
Oh, that's good.
At MIT.
Because the traffic, to be on the roads then would have been awful.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest issue is actually staff getting to and from.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
And there's also another issue where there's a lot of people who are working at MIT have children in schools, and if schools close and they have to come into work, then what are they going to do with the kids? Just leave them home alone?
Right.
Right. So anyway, so it was horrible. But it's,
You teach on Tuesdays?
I teach Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But
because you seem to be doing stuff on the computer Tuesday afternoon. Do that at work.
Not today. Today the support staff came and took my computer away.
Uh-oh.
They're going to bring
what
me another.
What did you do?
It wasn't me, but my office computer got whisked away, and now I'm living in dire fear that tomorrow morning I'm going to want to do really basic stuff and nothing's going to work.
So you're careful about keeping that just office stuff?
No, not really, but the thing is I have a lot of, I'm big into duplications, just to have redundancy throughout.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody that knows anything.
So anything I have posted on a website exists on one or more computers.
So you're saying that they now have access to all of your stuff, or have they always had access?
They could ruin me.
No, seriously. I mean, but you plug into their network, so they're going to have access anyway.
You know, they could do it anyway. Sure. But it's always a little bit scary.
Well, ever since I read the Edward Snowden book, I mean, nothing is safe. Nothing.
I know. I trust these folks.
All right.
Do something.
I know. You have to draw your limits. Okay.
So
December 3rd.
December 3rd. And one thing since we last met.
Which was just last
week.
Here
in TV land.
Right.
I did manage to get, not to be obsessing too much more on elections. But the thing is, one of the things people were really curious about was who voted, right?
And how old.
How old, age distribution, it was in the...
Do you know how many were newly registered? Do you have that
I could find that out, but I didn't bother to find that out.
That would, certainly to me, be an interesting fact.
It didn't seem like it was like gigantic numbers of new registrants.
All right.
But there were definitely increases. One thing I'll say here before saying anything else is that... Mm-hmm. If you compare 2017 to 2019, there were 66,354 registered in 17, 68,839 in 2019. So
there were
3.7% increase in registered voters.
Wow.
The number of people who actually voted, though, dropped a bit. We'll do that one sec.
Okay.
So it's dropped about a little close to 5%.
With the number of people that voted dropped?
Yeah, there was 2017, it was 22,407.
Uh-huh.
It dropped down to 21,329.
So about 1,000.
So it dropped in the neighborhood of about 5% drop. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting was, it's one thing if you have an overall drop and in all categories of 5%, because then you wouldn't expect to see any changes. But, there was this 22-year-old kid who was running, Burhan Azim.
Yeah.
There was another younger candidate.
But there was only one opening, though. There were three.
Yeah, there was a lot more excitement, I think,
in 2017. Yeah, a lot more possibility of change.
With lots of open seats and whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, we always like to say all seats are open.
True, but
most likely to be returned. So I was curious and say, was there going to be some big, big shift?
Yeah.
And the truth is, there wasn't too many really big shifts, but there were some things, if you know where to look, that were kind of interesting.
Okay, which is what you do. So we're going to see that now?
So let's take a look here. So
is this high enough up, or should I go
Let's go scoop down a little bit here to 2017, which is one right below it. Right here, you go.
You want just to be on that
sort of, for the sake of comparison. So 2017 election was really kind of extraordinary in that there were something in the neighborhood of about 5,000 new voters.
Wow.
More people voted than usual. Mm-hmm. It was a gigantic increase. And actually, go scoot down even further.
To 15?
To 2015. What you'll see is a really, really noticeable change. So,
So
these bars here represent three-year increments from 18 to 20, 21 to 23.
Okay, and this is the age down here, 20
to
20.
Yeah, the ages are on the bottom. And all right. The actual number of voters, not percentage, but the number of voters.
So the highest people that voted were in the 68.
Yeah, so what you see in 2015 was kind of typical of, mm-hmm. of not only of that year and prior years.
Uh-huh.
Where you see a peak of people like around upper 60s, actually.
Right, yeah.
As voting.
Baby boomers.
Right, baby boomers, right? And then, of course, it inevitably, you know, it drops down as you head toward older voters.
Yeah.
And down in, you see a kind of a rise in the younger ranges.
Right around
peaking
here.
Around
yeah,
the 27
yeah.
to 29 range.
Yeah, which is post-school.
Right?
I mean, they're not as college.
And then so as you, you know, so, that, you know, you figure, okay, those are like some, you know, the presence of graduate students, whatever.
Right.
So if you scroll
back
up to 2017, this is what was really extraordinary.
Oh, my gosh, look at this.
You saw this gigantic spike.
And not the college kids, but the 29-year-olds.
Yeah. Now,
and the 20,
you know, as some have speculated, and I think this is accurate,
mm-hmm.
That's also around the age Sumbul Siddiqui was in, and then she kind of came out of nowhere and was this really big presence.
Right. She would have been about 29.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there were you know, the presence of candidates like Sumbul Siddiqui,
that look like
Sean
you know, that
Cherney,
were your age.
Who were kind
that's
of younger.
That's true. You're right.
And they recruited,
mm-hmm.
brought out people who might otherwise not
been
not
that
have
interested.
Not been all that interested.
Yeah. That's
so
interesting.
So
wow, higher than any of these.
Yeah, it just jumped higher than the
look
older categories, right?
In fact, it doesn't get even until whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Now if you go up to 19, you'll see that there's still that larger numbers there, but it's kind of spread out a little bit.
This stayed
and
higher.
So you dropped from a 1,600 peak down to about 1,400, which was more of a drop-off than in other age categories.
Mm.
For the most part, everything else was not all that different, though I'll show you, actually, if we scoot down even further, I'll show you some.
Where are we going?
So go
the other
beyond,
way?
Yeah, so all the way
beyond
down
15?
To. Beyond 15? Yeah, okay, so here's what I did is I just basically defined some sort of comparison.
You want this chart here?
Yeah, so what I did was I just put 2017 in green and 2019 in the reddish color.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can now see when you look at that in the very youngest ranges.
Yeah.
You know, the youngest range is no change. But then in the 21 to 23, there's a little bit of an increase. This is in a year where there was a 5% decrease in voters, but there was a small increase. But noticeably in the just upper 20s range, there was actually yet another increase.
Mm.
But then when you get up into the late 20s, early 30s, right, like up in the that
right
neck
here.
Of the woods. No. So you see where that big tall green peak is?
Yeah.
That was the one that's left 29. Over from 2017.
Yeah. You're right.
Notice how that just dropped. So
yeah.
So right next to it is the 2019 version.
Mm-hmm. They moved.
So there was or they got older and they moved into the next category and they weren't replaced by the next from 2 years later.
Right, good point. What's the one underneath it? Is that something you want to look at?
I'll highlight it, but the thing is, so it's kind of hard to do this. So if you actually scroll down one further, what I did is I just stuck some sort of arrows just to point out things that I thought were interesting.
Yeah.
So you can see there in the range, which is about, 24 to 26, was where there was an actual increase in a year when, in fact, there was an overall decrease.
You're talking about the red now.
Yeah. Right? Now, I'm going to personally interpret that. It's a little tough to do this. It's largely speculative.
Yeah.
Saying that there were, you know, the Baran Azim targeting a lot of people down at MIT.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, undergraduates, but you know, graduate students, people who are kind of in that range there.
Well, what about Jivon? Isn't he?
And Jivon Sabrina Wheeler, which I suspect also would be responsible for some of that. The interesting thing is that when you look at the three years later bar, there was actually a real drop-off in that peak from 2017.
Talking about the green here.
Green dropping down to the red. And if you look at all the age ranges going further up, they're all drop, 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 drop.
The green seems to stay above the red, though, all the time.
Well, that's because that was 2017.
Oh, all right. I'm getting confused.
And then the reds
are
all below.
So there was definitely a drop in voters.
Except when you get to about 70, just over 70 years of age.
Here we go.
So if you have, if you're in the range of 72 to 74.
Hello.
There was an increase.
Yes.
So no, just below that, to the right there, you see?
To the right,
green jumps up to red. No, one over.
Here.
Right? One over, to the right. That's it. Right
there.
Oh,
that's older than 74.
That's actually in the 72 to 74 range.
Oh,
so that
okay.
actually jumps up a little bit.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And then
yeah.
if you go through the next three-year band, which is the one that's a little bit older even, it jumps up there as well. And actually, you get a few increases for
I know what that's about.
What do you think that is?
I think it's the whole AHO thing, and it was a lot of property owners and people that, you know, were older,
so
they've been here a long time.
That's exactly my interpretation.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I want to say, though, about all of this stuff mm-hmm. is that, there are little effects. You can notice things in the youngest ranges mm-hmm. where there were some increases, and in the older ranges where... Not the much older ages, but the
well,
thing
is... Well, look at
this.
These people voted the same. It's probably the same person.
The same person, right. But the thing is that you saw an effect there in the, you know, the 70, people who are 70 to 80 range.
Yeah.
And you saw some in the, like, 26 and below.
Yeah.
And then everything else was just, I wouldn't call it uniform drop-off, mm-hmm. but the thing is it was
closer.
Basically,
yeah.
Yeah, just sort of like a decrease in there.
That's
amazing. So... So, again, I look at that, and what I think I see is, I think you're correct that some of the older voters may also be homeowners, and maybe they were...
Very energized,
They got energized mm-hmm. over the overlay proposal, so mm-hmm. they came out in some numbers.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there was a larger effect, I think, just in the relative drop-off across the board.
Yeah.
But the thing is, then also, I think the reason why we ended up with Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler as opposed to Craig Kelly was probably because of the... Some of the increased numbers on the other end of the range.
True, and the whole transfer thing, but
I mean, the thing is like the one thing I really got to thinking about this was the Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler election.
How old is he, by the way?
He's in his 30s somewhere.
Is he the one that lives with a lot of other people, or is he married?
I think he has some roommates. I think they both have roommates, but that's not uncommon.
All right, so they have roommates. They're renters, both of them.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, one of the things I think we talked about last week was that, you know, he was also on three different slates, so to whatever degree slate dynamics.
Right, and one of them was sort of a little bit, not opposed, but he got into the right places, I guess. Yeah.
So basically he received some benefit from getting feed from other slate members.
Or being on any slates, some people that didn't have any slates,
right.
I mean, were
but,
not...
But there's one other factor that I think I'm willing to go out on a limb and suggest here, too, which is that, you know, as much as I hate to acknowledge this...
Yeah.
You know, we still are, many of us, I think, are still kind of locked into a CCA versus independent mindset, or mm-hmm. in the more modern age, we think, the ABC group is pushing one end of things versus the Cambridge Residence lines. But the truth is I think, that this Our Revolution group may not be a big player yet, or maybe never will be. But the thing is that they are, I think they have in their ranks some people who are pretty savvy with social media and networking. And you know, when you look at candidates like Nadeem Mazin, when he was elected to the city council, there was a certain group of people, you know, remember he was also a spokesperson, organizer, people with this Occupy Boston group, as was Mike Connolly, and Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler very much identifies himself as a Democratic Socialist
and
the Bernie Sanders
crowd.
Yeah, so the thing is that that's, even though we have nonpartisan municipal elections and our revolution phenomenon is more of a national phenomenon, mm-hmm. I think that there are enough people who sort of adhere to that, at least for the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Their votes are clustering so that they might be, if they wanted to legitimately
claim...
I think
it's a force to be reckoned with, and I think it's going to affect the next election, for good or bad.
Maybe so, yeah. But, you know, I still think of it as more of a national thing.
I mean the big
thing.
Election, not the
municipal
election.
I think of it primarily national, but so it's sort of interesting to see, you know, is it a factor? It's certainly a factor, I think, here in the local elections.
It's definitely a factor. There's stuff going on with the younger people, and I have to say younger, not me, not even you.
Yeah,
you're younger than
but I am. But much of us will focus on the ABC versus CCC mm-hmm. or overlay versus non-overlay, mm-hmm. whatever. But the thing is that independent of all of that, mm-hmm. There were certain candidates like Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler, I think, regardless of where he stood on that issue, or whether he was on this slate or that slate or whatever, I think he's probably the one who benefited most from the revolution.
Yeah, Patty Nolan got signed on with them and Dennis Carlon, so everyone jumped on that wagon.
And it's very hard to squeeze out of the data any interpretation as to where those votes were coming from. I would say Patty Nolan probably benefited from some of those older and homeowners or whatever.
She crossed the board there.
So some of those bumps you saw in the numbers mm-hmm. over there probably were helping her out.
Yep.
And some of those younger voters were probably helping Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler to be the two new additions to the council.
Right.
So
they wanted new faces.
Yeah, yeah. I also broke it out. I didn't publish it or anything like that by ward and precinct to see how the trends changed.
I think we showed that last week.
But the thing is, I didn't actually do a comparison of ward and precinct totals for 2017 versus 2019.
Okay.
It's not as interesting in my mm-hmm. view, but the one thing you definitely do notice is that mm-hmm. there was a gigantic increase in the two MIT precincts. That was every bit Barranazine.
I mean, that is everybody that runs for office here has to pay attention to the MIT population.
I think that's generally true, but the thing is that it's sort of like...
It did with Nadine. It did with Leland Chung.
I think the way you look at it is that if you're the type of candidate who might find an appeal in those places, then there is this available mine. You can mine those locations to squeeze votes.
Because they have lots of graduate students compared to
But if you don't mine them, they probably won't come out.
I think they were mined. Yeah.
It's not historically, it's never been all that easy to actually get the student vote to work for you, but maybe that's loosening up a bit.
Social media and everything now,
saying
you're an MIT graduate or whatever. I don't know.
Actually, there's one other thing. I thought maybe we could election related.
Where is it, though?
Let's do the dollar per vote.
Where is that?
It's the next tab over here.
Okay. Here we go.
So one of the things I've been keeping track of during the election, even before all the candidates were known, was just keeping track of how, because I'm kind of curious, because there has been this proposal that who knows if it's actually going to go anywhere about public financing for municipal election campaigns.
I'm not paying for people to run for this.
I'm not inclined to go for it either.
I think there should be caps. People have talked about that and advertise it when they go over it.
Right.
But I don't want the money in Cambridge going to anybody that wants to run here. I'm sorry.
I tend to agree with you on that.
I would really fight that.
But the thing is here is even if you don't believe in public financing for local municipal elections, and I primarily do not, still there is this notion. There is, I think, Councillor Toomey and others have floated notions about that there should be limits on how much you spend or limits how much you put
in. Well, that's what we just talked about. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Some people said a cap. I mean, just saying, you know, a voluntary cap.
Right. But the thing is, so there were actual numbers floated by Councillor Toomey saying if you run for school committee, then you shouldn't spend more than X number of dollars.
Oh, we actually gave a figure.
And the same thing with, it was something like a $50,000 cap, or maybe it was less on
city
council. I would
hope it's less. That's really a lot of money.
So part of my personal mission this year was also just to keep track of it, to say, let's actually look and see
if there was that kind of cap.
Right. What actually is the scale here?
Right.
How much money are people actually raising to run campaigns? How effective is it? Can you run a successful campaign on short money?
And not spend a lot of money. Yeah.
Right. So let's take a look over here. Right. So this is, and again, this is a little, I've sorted it by dollars per number one vote, which is a little embarrassing, honestly, because if you're a candidate.
So what's the order here, though?
Right, so this is just basically if you...
But it's not in any
particular order. It's ranked
order.
By number one dollars per vote. That's why it's highlighted in blue at the top.
Oh, so this is the cost the most and then down.
I mean,
down.
You can sort by
it.
Any of these categories.
But this
the thing is
what,
is
that
if you do
sense.
That... So if you see somebody like Charles Franklin, he spent a fair amount of money.
He raised quite a bit of money, actually.
A lot of it was his own money, too. So he spent about $31,000 on a campaign, but still did not get that many number one votes. So he ends up kind of pushing. And by the way, these numbers are not final because they're still paying bills, right?
But are they still getting money in?
A little bit here and there. But the money coming in seems to be less of a factor now. Risa Metnick.
But wouldn't the money per vote still be based on what they brought in?
No, dollars per vote is based on how much money you spent.
Oh, you spent out of that money. I get it. Okay.
Division.
So until you know that.
Now, Risa Metnick, she was a late addition, so to be perfectly fair, as a very, very late addition, she wasn't going
to
get that many number one votes. She spent $16,000, so it ends up being a high number. Mark McGovern is sort of the more interesting one, I think, in this, in that he spent a ridiculous amount of money, $93,000 plus, and growing. Raised over $100,000, came in with a respectable
number. But he spent almost all of it.
That's what you do. He got 1621 number one votes, more than enough to get himself elected eventually.
Yeah.
But, it ends up being pretty costly at over $57. Mm-hmm. And again, this is rising, too.
Right.
Adrian Musgrave, still up
she
in the neighborhood of about $50 per number one vote.
Yeah.
Now, if you scroll down a little bit more, though, so you see Nicola Williams, Ben Simon, Quentin Zondervan also spent about $34 per number one vote to get his $13.92.
Oh, he raised a lot of money, too.
He spends a good chunk of his own money as well.
Okay.
But if you scroll a little further down, after Malin, Maury, Tim Toomey, you get down to, and Denise Simmons is 26 and change and rising because she's still paying,
raises
bills.
Lots of money. But why is that so low?
Because she got a lot of number one votes. So it's dollars per vote, large denominator.
Look at that. That's right. So the more you get, the less you actually
exactly.
spend.
Exactly. So
the
is it merely, really the,
it takes
not,
a little while.
The number
we'll
one,
okay,
number
I get
one,
it.
Dollars per number one vote is kind of a measure of effectiveness.
Sure. Effectiveness,
right?
Sure.
So the thing is, if you can spend relatively low money for number one votes, then you've been very, very successful in terms of an efficiency. Now, if you scroll down a little bit further, you get down to something which is really kind of, wouldn't this be the ideal? So further down, So there's, here we go. So Sumbul Siddiqui at
$10.93
per vote. So she's coming in under 11 bucks.
And look what
she got.
$2,500. Wow.
But that's because she topped the ticket. She got the most number one vote.
And she actually raised, to me, that's reasonable there.
Right, but she spent $27,000. And again, there may be more. We'll see. Right? But the thing is that, nice, efficient campaign, $10.93.
I would say Patty Nolan,
and rising.
Too.
Yeah. But Patty Nolan absolutely wins the prize here, right?
Right. She gets
spends, and again, there may be some more money that will come in later reports, but as of right now, she spent only $16,437 for her 1685 number one votes, which is under 10 bucks.
Yep.
Now, this is like in Freddie Fantini territory, quite honestly, in terms of low cost per vote. It's kind of a very nice measure of a
where was
kind
Craig
of
Kelly?
Ideal popularity.
I was just curious about Craig.
Right there in the middle. So he spends very.
He got more number ones than he's ever gotten.
Right, but
it
the
didn't,
thing is that the slate phenomenon was definitely did not work in his favor.
But I see this category here, the 31, 33. I think that's reasonable. I think more than 35 is ridiculous.
Right. But the thing is, if people are going to continue, and I don't know whether they're going to continue, but they're, it's still sitting there as, a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
You want to have voluntary spending caps? Do you want to put limits? How much of this can you even do within the law? It's not even clear to me at all.
Right. I mean, but what's they've looked at different models, but they're not always convincing. Like, I guess Seattle.
I'm not convinced
at
all.
I just feel like, why should we, Sumbul, to her credit, I mean, she does retail policy. I mean, a lot of them do.
That's
right. She knocks on doors. She shows up.
That's right. And I think...
And that does not require... It requires time, but doesn't necessarily require a lot of money. I didn't get any kind of literature from her, I don't think.
And actually, some other candidates, like Patty Nolan, also have a very, very well-developed network of people.
Well, she was a school committee person
from
for
her
14
school committee
years. I mean, that helps
years
a lot.
And whatever. And the thing is, they didn't forget her. So the thing is, they were available.
She's almost like an incumbent.
Yeah, almost, so you didn't have to spend enormous amounts of money to draw in the voters. Right. In fact, they were a lot of them were already there with you.
Right.
You still have to be nice to them. You know, you still have to reach out to them.
Right. You're a known quantity. You didn't have to get your
people like
name
to be
out.
Asked. Yeah. It's
right.
True.
Yeah.
You know. So, but anyway, just as a ballpark estimate. Yeah. So for candidates who are considering being, you know, future candidates.
Yeah.
So just to be aware of what kind of money people have spent. How much you minimally might need to spend in order to be a credible candidate, how much you could spend if you want to really, really throw your money in the furnace, right? If you really, really
want to. But it's a cautionary tale because obviously spending a lot doesn't necessarily, except in certain cases maybe, but you know, it doesn't always guarantee you.
And in fact, there are some spectacular examples in recent elections where the candidates, Paul Toner spent a lot of money, did not win.
He was almost right up there with the 90.
Ken Reeves, when he was still around, spent an enormous amount of money in the campaign where he was not reelected.
Yeah.
So if a person believes that it's all about the money, I think that's becoming less and less
true.
Sure,
right.
So and I don't want to overstate this, but it may well be that the whole, any sort of promotion for, you know, public financing of municipal elections or even limits and whatever is sort of missing the point. It's that more and more through the use of social media, good, strong email lists,
just the old
and networking
knocking on doors. Going to community events.
Maybe the money, at least in local elections, maybe the money aspect of this is kind of becoming moot.
If they want it to be like, if you as a taxpayer, and you know, your exit, you want this to go to a, fine. But I will say no.
Right, exactly.
But I just think it's a bad idea.
We don't actually have a mechanism for
even doing
that.
That's true, because unless you own property.
There's no such thing as a local income tax or anything like that anyway.
That's another home rule petition.
So how would you even get people to sort of say, okay, it would have to be a voluntary contribution.
Or you'd have to have a fund like set up like we do for meaningful things like fires, but this would be, I don't think it would get a lot of people.
Exactly. So anyway, so we're kind of winding down for this half hour. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be a few other kind of interesting things from elections to talk about some other day, but we're pretty much exhausted most of what needs to be said.
Yes, you'll come up
inauguration
with something,
I'm sure. Is January 6th at 10 a.m.
Oh, that's always, so I won't be around, but I'm sure you'll see it.
All right. Anyway, see you in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.